It's Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Wolfort. A few years ago, I got interested in a group that was cleaning up marine debris from beaches in Prince William Sound. I volunteered, and I was blown away by what a rewarding experience it was to pick up trash. I spent plenty of time in the wilderness, but this was unique because I felt like I was improving the place, and it's the kind of place that normally is way too good to ever be improved by human hands. Unfortunately, garbage is everywhere, especially in our waterways, but you can make a difference. When you help get rid of it, you feel like you're recreating something magnificent. On today's show, we're talking about beach cleanup, both on the wild outer coast, where stuff is washing up from Japan, and on our own beaches here in Anchorage. And we'll talk about the upcoming creek cleanup too, which is going to be starting here shortly, and where we get to tend to our own backyard and you can get involved. So that's today's show, Beach and Creek Cleanup. And my first guest in this beginning half of the show is Chris Pallister of the Gulf of Alaska Keeper. And he's a guy I met in Prince William Sound who was organizing that that volunteer beach cleanup years ago. And he's still at it, cleaning up the coast of Alaska from all of this plastic debris that comes washing up all the time. Thanks for being with us, Chris.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So you're getting ready to go out for another field season of cleaning up Montague Island, Hinchinbrook, Kayak Island, some of these very remote beaches that most people don't go to. What's out there? What are you cleaning up?
Well, we're working primarily this year on Kayak and Montague Island and some other projects around the states. But on those outer Gulf Coast, there's a tremendous amount of plastic trash. And, of course, there's legacy debris, pre-tsunami debris, and then all the Japanese tsunami debris. And there's everything from derelict fishing gear to everything you can expect to find in a home.
Right.
That was emptying into the ocean.
And I went out to you to Gore Point years ago, which is on the outside of the Kenai Peninsula. And a couple of things that struck me that were mind-blowing was, number one, the sheer amount. I mean, like, if you could take a football stadium and fill it with the stuff that was washed up there. And then also that it was all had foreign, you know, lettering on it. It was all kinds of everything you could imagine. I mean, this is a weird array. There was a TV. There was this stuff that you're like, where the heck did this stuff come from? Why is it there? You know, that's you must run into that all the time out there.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. You know, on our monitoring sites, we try to decipher where these things come from. We have a bunch of sites that we clean every year. And a lot of the stuff doesn't have any kind of identification marks on it. But so we track bottles that we can identify, and over 60% of them are from the Western Pacific. And that pretty much tracks what everything else is. So it's an astounding amount of garbage. Debris densities on the outside of Montague Island are 30 tons a mile in places of plastic.
Holy, 30 tons a mile just on the beach. So that must, like, just to imagine that, that's like huge windrows and piles of debris. It's not like a few bottles here and there.
No, it's not like a few bottles here and there, not at all. A lot of that weight would be coming old derelict offshore fishing nets, the stuff that drifted all the way across the Pacific, and a lot of heavy buoys, commercial fishing buoys and stuff. But there is just a huge amount of other stuff. And the debris volume doubled after the tsunami.
Wow.
The weight didn't double, but the volume doubled because it's a lot of lightweight stuff. You know,
right. Tremendous. The tsunami that hit Japan and basically wiped out a whole region, shoreline region of that country. Well, I want to get into that a little bit more later, but just to sort of position this whole discussion, why should we care, right? Now, hardly anybody's ever out there. Aesthetically, of course, we don't want garbage to be there, but what's the environmental reason for getting rid of this stuff?
You know, as time goes by and more research is being done, it's clear that this stuff is a hell of a lot more dangerous to or harmful to the environment than people expected. I mean, there's a tremendous lot of chemicals in this stuff that are now clearly are leaching out and getting into the biosphere, and they're working their way up the food chain. And it's going to become an issue of human health at some point, if it already isn't. It's just a matter of the research. So you have the entanglement issues, you have the ingestion issues, you have birds dying from this stuff all over the world, and, you know, but it's going beyond that. Now it's getting into a toxicity issue, and this stuff is clearly getting into the food chain. So it's a serious environmental issue.
So this massive amount of material, derelict fishing gear, which I guess destroys a lot of animals and fish and birds, plastic that gets ground down into tiny pieces, and there's really no other way to get rid of it than just go out and pick it up.
That's Exactly right. And at some point, it gets ground down in such fine pieces, you can't pick it up no matter how much money you throw at it and how much effort. So what you need to do is get it before it gets ground up, which is pretty difficult to do. I mean, you know how remote these beaches are and how many miles of them. I mean, there's over 3,500 miles of shoreline just in Prince William Sound alone. And you know, the places impacted by that tsunami are probably close to 15,000 miles. Mm. So.
Now that where you're working now is an area of really extreme remoteness and ruggedness where, I mean, we have tons of listeners who are pretty outdoorsy and will be kayaking in Prince William Sound, Kachemak Bay, and maybe Cook Inlet, but not too many people out there on the outer coast.
No.
Pretty lonely, right?
Right. When you get on the outside of Montague, particularly the northern half of it, it's extremely rugged. It's jagged rocks, big rocky reefs out there. The beaches are armored with thousands of big drift logs and stuff. I mean, there's beaches where we literally cannot land a helicopter on it, so rough. And that's really difficult conditions working. Plus, there's always heavy surf in there, and then you throw the weather on top of that. It's really a very, very difficult place to work. And Hinchinbrook's the same, and Kayak's the same, and you know, the Barren Islands are the same. All those spots are very, very difficult.
So when I was out there with your guys, and this was a number of years ago, I was just impressed at the outdoor kind of the agility and skill to function in that area and not get hurt, right? I mean, your guys really have to, they work really, really hard in a really remote environment.
Yeah, and we pick guys that have lots and lots of years of outdoor experience. You know, a lot of them are wilderness guides, one way, another remote outdoorsmen, you know, and they're really tough, and they have a lot of experience, and they're very athletic, and they love it, and they're good at it. So, you know, they keep coming back year after year after year, which amazes me.
Well, it's super rewarding, isn't it? I mean, when you actually clean up a beach, and I remember that on Gore Point, this huge debris field, and then it's, you know, helicopters out, and it's an unbelievable amount of work. Just like, you can't even imagine how much work it was, but then it's clean and it's a totally different place, right? And so it must be a huge feeling of accomplishment.
It is, you know, and that's why the guys keep coming back. They just love the fact that they're giving back, and of course, it's a beautiful place to be, and it's really, really impressive area. It's unbelievable. And, you know, Gore Point, we go back and clean that every year since you were out there, so we can see what has happened. You know, back in the forest where it was so heavily covered with plastic, all the grass is coming back in there now. Before, it was just all dead because there was so much plastic on it. And we found that if we hit that stuff every year, it's vastly easier to clean it when it's down there on the tide line than it is back there in the forest all ground into pieces. So, but
so how much, how much material will show up on a mile of beach like that you clean it up, you know it's totally clean, you come back the next year, is it going to be just buried again?
Well, it really depends on the weather cycles in the winter, for one thing. If we get a lot of heavy onshore storms, that'll pull a lot of debris out of the gyre out there, the garbage patch, and especially if we get what they call the Pineapple Express, where we get that low that's blowing onshore for days on end, then we'll get a lot of garbage. Other years, not quite as much. And of course, you throw in something like a container spill or a tsunami somewhere, and then it fluctuates that way too. But Gore Point, I think on an average year, we get about a ton off of that East Beach every year. Right after the tsunami, it was close to 4 tons.
Hmm. It's Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Wolfworth. My topic today is beach and creek cleanup. In the second half, we're going to be talking about the sort of the local beach and creek cleanup in Anchorage. But right now, I've got Chris Pallister, who's with Gulf of Alaska Keeper, and they do their work on the outer coast, cleaning up these very remote beaches where enormous quantities, you know, until you've seen it, you can't even imagine how much stuff. I mean, it's way more than a truck could carry. I mean, we're talking about amounts of stuff that you need a huge barge to carry, and they actually clean up those beaches over the summer. Really tough guys doing some really interesting and difficult outdoor work. So, Chris, you mentioned the garbage patch and the gyre. Where is this stuff coming from, and what are those? When you talk about the gyre, that's sort of a big spiral-shaped current, right, that's bringing it. It's depositing it here, and it's not Alaskan garbage for the most part, right?
No, for the most part, everything we get is Western Pacific drift up, you know, coming off to the countries over there, or from container spills. And
it's just the current happens to bring it here. Right?
Yeah, the current comes this way. You know, it comes across in the convergence zone, and the storms, the prevailing storms, are out of that direction. And then we have the Lhasa coastal current, which is retrograde, runs up the coast and out through False Pass on Aleutian. So once that debris gets up into the Gulf, it gets jammed up against the Montague Island and Kayak and Hinchinbrook and that. It's probably the worst place in the state, is that area. So yeah, it's an amazing amount of trash.
But I mean, in a way, it's a way to get it out of the environment. I mean, if it's out, the garbage patch is this place where it is, it's sort of in the middle of the ocean, and there's really no way to clean it up from out there, right?
Right. A lot of people have dreams about going out there cleaning it up, but when you start looking at it logistically and how deep it is, it's not just floating on the surface. It's down thousands of feet deep, different types of density of plastic or different levels in the ocean, and it's billions of little pieces. And there's no way that you can economically ever clean that up that I could see. So yeah, you're going to wait for it to get on the shore and you're going to clean it up. And a lot of people ask us, why bother if more of it's going to keep coming? Which to me is just a silly question.
That's the only way to get rid of it, yeah.
Yeah, you're just going to let it pile up forever?
Right. Well, I guess that's what we were doing, though it's only been piling up since we invented plastics and started throwing it in the ocean, right?
Right.
Yeah. So let's talk about the tsunami. Just a horrible, horrible, mind-blowing tragedy 5 years ago now, right?
Four, I believe. March in 2011.
Oh, okay. And it wiped out all those shoreline communities, and all that material went in the ocean and then went through that big spiral-shaped current and it showed up in Alaska. What kind of stuff have you found? And how do you know it came from the tsunami?
Well, clearly, the biggest indicator that came from the tsunami is all of the crushed foam from buildings, urethane foam and, you know, blue board and whiteboard and pink board and all that, and it has Japanese writing on it. And of course, then there's all the aquaculture debris. They have the big oyster culture floats and very distinctive, and the styrofoam floats that we don't have here. That stuff's all over out there, and just immense amount of styrofoam. And then a lot of them use little kerosene heaters in their homes over there, and they have little 5-gallon jugs of kerosene jugs that they have. Found those all over the place.
Wow.
Things like that, you know.
So it wouldn't be really coming from anywhere else.
No, right. There's no other place it would have come from.
And you were saying, you were talking about some kind of tragic stuff that you found, or stuff that suggested kind of the tragedy.
Yeah, one thing that we find a lot are shoes, and they're not new shoes. I mean, it's not like a Nike container spill like we had years ago and all the Nike shoes washed up. These are shoes that are, the soles were worn off and things like that. So you know that they came from some place where somebody had been using them, if not right off their feet. And remember at one time at Gore Point, we found a matched set of children's baby sandals on the beach up there about 50 yards apart. And they were worn, so they obviously had been used. And you know, you start thinking that came off some poor kid in Japan, and it's pretty heartrending when you think about that.
Yeah, and the Japanese government is assisting in you being able to do this work, right?
Yeah, they generously put $5 million into the cleanup of the United States and $1 million into the Canadian cleanup, and you know, that's being distributed through the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation. It passed through the State Department and NOAA, so we're getting, Alaska's got the lion's share of that money because we have the lion's share of the debris. By far, the most of it came up here.
Mm-hmm. What are your other sources of funding?
Exxon Valdez Oil Spill Trustee Council's been funding this. This will be our fourth summer with them doing marine debris cleanups in the oil spill footprint area. And also, the Alaska legislature gave us a pretty substantial grant a couple of years ago, and we're just finishing up the tail end of that. And so we've had some pretty good funding the last couple of years.
Mm-hmm. And what do you spend the money for? Obviously, you have boats, you pay your workers, you have to get them on shore. I mean, what are the main costs that you face?
You're looking at fuel. Insurance is a big one. Vessel cost, helicopters, tugs, disposal.
Yeah,
it really adds up. We're doing this big removal project this summer, which is a separate one from the cleanup work. And we've been caching debris for, this will be our third summer, and then we're going to pull it all off in July and August this year.
Yeah, we should make sure that listeners understand that, because your workers are out there and they're gathering up all this stuff in some really, we said, really rugged places, but also really rugged conditions. I mean, storms and But getting the stuff, I mean, getting off a boat onto a surf-pounded beach and getting back on is hard enough, but there's no way you can do it with tons of material, right?
Right.
So then you gather up the stuff, put it in big sacks, and then figure out how to get it out of there.
Right. In 2013, we were doing it the old way. We were just picking it up and taking it and putting it in our boats and trying. But once you get on those outer coastline, exactly like you said, trying to get through the surf with an armload of debris is threatening.
Yeah, to say the least,
And we've had boats flipped, you know, inflatables flipped, and it's really dangerous. So in 2013, by mid-July, we'd already hauled 17 landing craft loads back to the Anchorage landfills where they were going, and at a cost of $7,000 a load, not counting the boat costs. That's just labor and all the rest of it, and fuel and disposal fees and everything.
Wow.
And we just couldn't do that anymore. There's not enough money to do it. So we just started super sacking everything and piling up in big caches out there.
And these super sacks, these big industrial sacks.
They hold about, the ones we use hold about a cubic yard and a third or a cubic yard and a half somewhere in
so
there.
So you wouldn't be able to move it without equipment.
No, you can't. Once you get them full, you can't move them unless they're full of just pure drinking bottles or something. So right now we have 1,800 of those super sacks cached in various spots from Kodiak all the way to Ockley Spit over there by east of Kayak Island. And so, and by mid-July this year, we're going to have another 1,200 super sacks sitting there, plus some other projects coming in. And we have now funding to take a big tug and barge and go along with helicopters and remove all that stuff. And then we're going to take it all to Seattle.
Okay, so the tug will bring the barge along the coast, and then the helicopter will pick up the sacks and put them on the barge.
Right, and we may have the Canadian, the folks in British Columbia may come in on this too. They're working on trying to tag into this thing, and then we're going to take it to Waste Management's handling that part of it, and we'll take it all to their yard on the Duwamish River in Seattle, and then we have a group that's going to sort it all and recycle it.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, as much as we can.
That's a lot of plastic. Yeah, it'd be nice.
Tremendous amount.
Yeah.
There'll probably be at least 30 train car loads by that time.
Oh, my gosh. Well, you know, the logistics of this are just mind-boggling. You started out sort of like some guys who wanted to do good.
Right.
And you start out working with volunteers and with your own little skiffs in Prince William Sound. And now you're running this huge thing with helicopters and barges and the whole thing. Do you ever think it would get to this level?
I didn't know if it would ever get to this level, but I knew it would have to if we were actually going to make a dent.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, after all of this, we're probably only going to have 5% of what needs to be done in Alaska done after the end of this summer. So we're barely making a dent as it is, and there's just not enough. There could be three efforts like ours going on simultaneously in this state, and be hard, would be just be kind of catching up, you know. So I'd hoped it'd get to this point.
Yeah. It's pretty impressive. So, do you need help? Do you need contributions from the public? Do you need volunteers, or is it sort of beyond the level that where you can really use individual help?
The problem with volunteers now are the ruggedness of the conditions where we're working.
And it costs a bunch of money just to get people out there.
Yeah, it costs a tremendous amount of money to move people back and forth. And so, unless people are willing to put in a serious commitment of time, we can't afford to take them out there. And then there's also the housing problem. You can't camp on beaches like on this Montague Island where we're working because it's all rocks and logs and it's nasty and rainy and wet and cold and it's not conducive to camping with a bunch of volunteers.
There's no flat ground.
Plus there's brown bears.
Right.
And so it's very difficult to work with volunteers in those conditions. We do still take volunteers out on different projects with us, and we'll probably have five or six groups of a couple people, 2 to 4 people this year. Mm-hmm. Going out with our crew for extended periods.
And we've got a link to Chris's website, the Gulf of Alaska Keeper, which they call GOAC, on our website, alaskapublic.org. Just go down to today's show, Beach and Creek Cleanup, and you can see Chris's site and some photos of these sites that you just simply can't believe, the amount of debris that is out there. And that'll be the best way to get in touch to find out if folks can help.
Right.
But, exactly. I mean, you're really not looking for large numbers of volunteers.
No,
it's not practical.
We just don't have the capacity to handle them.
Right.
That's
but in the second half of the show, we are going to talk about a way you can volunteer to clean up waterways here in Anchorage where you don't need a helicopter. You can just drive down there and do your stuff. So stick with us. Chris, one thing I wanted to touch on while you're here is you have seen some of the most amazing remote places in Alaska in all kinds of conditions, from Kodiak all the way to the sort of the Lost Coast around Kayak Island. I've seen some of those places, but I don't know anybody who's seen as much of it as you have. What are some of your favorite spots out there? What are some of the most beautiful and impressive spots or places you want to go back to?
You know,
or you want to keep it secret?
You know, one place that our crew just absolutely loves is Gore Point. And it's not that it's so stunningly beautiful.
It's pretty beautiful.
It is beautiful, but there's something about Gore Point that is really fascinating, and we always like to go back there. But the outside of Montague is really cool in itself too. You know, it's a different aspect. You know, you're in a tough place when you're on the outside of Montague.
Uh-huh. And what's that? The area behind Gore Point called? Is that Port Dick back there?
Port Dick, and then east of there.
And that's actually pretty protected. You could take a float plane in there and go kayaking or something.
And there's a lake there at Gore Point people can land on and get access to the North Beach too. And a lot of people do that, and they go out there and they go surfing.
Uh-huh.
And then east of there is another, that Nuka Island area is a really nice place. We really like it out there too.
So what are some of the weirdest or most interesting things you found? I mean, you're like the world's, you're doing like 30 train cars full of beachcombing, essentially. do you ever find stuff that's fun or that you want to keep?
Yeah, we do. And you know, we don't, everybody asks us about the Japanese glass floats, of course, and you don't find any that are very big anymore, although one of our guys did find one of the big 16-inch ones last summer, so they were all really thrilled about that. But
and there were always the rubber duckies and stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know if those are still out there.
Yeah, we're still finding those, the first-year toys.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, but truthfully, most of it's just garbage. I mean, it's just destroyed, but you always find some interesting things, but nothing that really sticks out in my mind other than... The last year, we started to get a whole bunch of high-density property boundary stakes that are coming from Japan. The tsunami just ripped them right out of the ground.
Wow.
And, you know, they don't have any windage, so it took them a long time to get here just purely by drift, but we're starting to find those all along the coast, and it just shows the power of that tsunami that just pull things right out of the ground, you know.
It does. Yeah. So when you think about a solution to this problem, it doesn't, you know, you're one guy, you've got these guys, you've done amazing work over the years, but you're not going to get all the plastic out of the ocean. Where do you see this going? I mean, you're going to keep working on it, you're going to get as much cleaned up as possible, but it seems like keeping it out of the ocean would be a way better way to go, right?
Yeah, it's far better way to go, and my take on this, they talk about personal responsibility and personal choice, but that's never going to cut it. And I think we need some top-down legislation or laws, treaties actually international in scope, and we need a real serious, truthful, honest carbon tax for one thing, so people start thinking about what they're buying. Mm-hmm. And we also need a cradle-to-grave registry on a lot of fishing gear, mm-hmm. and we need serious deposit taxes on everything plastic.
Right.
To put a value on all of it. If you put a value on all of it, then it's not going to get tossed away. That to me would do more than anything else. Because, you know, personal choice is not going to stop the container ships that turn over out in the ocean.
Right.
Or the shipwrecks. Right. Or the tsunamis. Or any of the rest of it that contribute a massive amount of marine debris that are beyond it. The, you know, stuff washing off its shoreline.
The coastal stuff, yeah. Well, and I mean, as outdoors people, we can also be thoughtful about our cup of noodles blowing over the side. I mean, how many of those did we find when we were in Prince William Sound, right? And the soda bottles and fishing gear. And it's just it's sort of being responsible and conscious of the fact that nothing goes away. It's going to end up somewhere.
Right. The one thing that really drives me nuts now, two things I find in Prince William Sound a lot are the energy drink bottles.
Yeah,
take a shot of energy drink and make you run all day long, but not enough energy to put your garbage in the trash can.
Right.
You know? And the other thing is all these sportsmen are out there shooting waterfowl and they're shooting plastic wads and all over the place, and plastic shotgun shells are getting left all over.
Mm-hmm.
And when we were kids growing up, that stuff was made out of paper.
Right.
And they work fine.
Right.
And I don't see why they have to be made out of plastic and it's just getting shot all over the environment.
Yeah.
And you know, doesn't make any sense to me.
I'll tell you what, after I went out with you, Chris, and did the volunteer cleanup in Prince William Sound, I never bought another water bottle again. Because after you see that in like a beautiful, beautiful place, and there's these plastic water bottles all over the place, and you think about the fact that this was manufactured, filled with water, shipped across the country, somebody drank it 30 seconds and then threw it overboard, and now it's here forever on the beach. You just realize that's ridiculous. We can't live that way anymore.
And not only that, you're getting phthalates put straight into your body when you're drinking out of a plastic bottle, you know, and that's nasty stuff.
All right. So we've given you your lesson for today, guys. And in the second half, we're going to talk about how you can help. I really want to thank Chris Pallister from Gulf of Alaska Keeper for being with us. Fascinating. Check out our website, alaskapublic.org. Click on Beach and Creek Cleanup, and you can learn more about Chris and his work. Thanks for being with us, Chris.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Carl.
So before we go to the second half, we're going to take a quick break. Stick with us. But first, it's time for the Outdoor Explorer Family Calendar. And our go-to family outdoors person and expert is Aaron Kirkland, the author of Alaska on the Go, Exploring the 49th State with Children. And she's also the publisher of the AK on the Go website. I'm Charles Woolforth. Stay with us as Outdoor Explorer continues.
Happy spring, Outdoor Explorer families. I'm Erin Kirkland, publisher of akonthego.com, Alaska's family travel resource, and I'm here with the May Family Calendar. Mother's Day is coming up, with many attractions opening their doors for another summer of Alaska visitors. The Alaska Native Heritage Center in Anchorage is free all day on Sunday, May 10th, from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Enjoy dancing, drumming, and a tour of the outside village sites of this facility dedicated to Alaska Native culture. Visit alaskanative.net. Moms get in free to the Alaska Zoo on Mother's Day, so be sure to attend Bear Aware at the Zoo from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. Learn bear safety habits, pick up a coloring book for the kids, and watch the zoo's bears try their best to open a resistant trash can. Go to alaskazoo.org for a complete listing of the day's events. How about a road trip? Spend Mother's Day weekend at the annual Valdez Fly-In and Air Show, one of the best ways to celebrate Alaska's bush pilots. Enjoy flying demonstrations, contests, and lots of airplanes. If you're going, make plans for overnight accommodations now by visiting valdezalaska.org. And if you're in Southeast, the Juneau Maritime Festival is happening on Saturday, May 9th from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. at the Marine Park Plaza. See sailboat races, Coast Guard demonstrations, and a survival suit race. Visit JunoMaritimeFestival.org for a complete schedule. And Fairbanks is getting in on transportation celebrations too, with the Alaska Railroad Open House on Saturday, May 9th at the Fairbanks Train Depot. It's free and full of train safety tips, music, and a free ride down the tracks. Find out more at AlaskaRailroad.com. And Saturday, May 16th, is Kids to Parks Day, sponsored by the National Park Trust. As an effort to encourage families to kick off a summer of outdoor fun, Kids to Parks Day promotes both nature and our country's open spaces. On the phone with me today from Rockville, Maryland, is Grace Lee, Executive Director of the Trust. Hello, Grace. How are you?
I'm doing very well. How are you doing today?
Just super, getting ready for summer. I wonder if you might quickly give folks an overview about the Park Trust first before we jump into Kids to Parks Day.
Sure, I'm happy to do that. The National Park Trust is a nonprofit organization, and our mission is twofold. We preserve critical parks and public lands, and what we're about today, our conversation today, is we connect kids all over the country to their local state and national parks and public lands, especially children from communities who don't have those resources to make those connections.
So how did Kids to Parks Day become a reality then? And how many kids last year participated? Do you know?
Actually, conservatively, we know about 500,000 children participated. And we launched this initiative the same year as the First Lady's Let's Move initiative. And so we're delighted to say that we're in support of Let's Move Outside. And so, like the First Lady's initiative, this is our fifth year as well. And we created this program because we knew there was a great need to get children unplugged and outdoors into nature. And we found out from talking to many families and teachers that a lot of the children in the communities didn't know about the parks around the corner or across town. They just had no connection and no knowledge of them. And many of these places are free or nearly free.
Fantastic. So I know even in Alaska, we have the same trouble with getting kids out exploring their local parks. So it's nice to hear it's not like national parks. It's any park in your community. So I know on the website, kidstoparks.org, families are pledging to commit to getting outside on that day. So what exactly are they committing to besides the fact that they're just going to go play in the park?
They're actually pledging that we want everyone to be registered and be counted. So they're pledging that they will participate in Kids to Parks Day and take a child in their life or children in their life to a park that weekend, hopefully on the 16th, but also the Friday before or the Sunday after, and make a commitment that they are going to unplug and take their children to a wonderful natural space in their community. And we think that a lot of families will have fun exploring and researching and finding what's available in their own community that they were not aware of before this park holiday.
Fantastic. Are there a few incentives? Because I think there might be one, right?
There are.
Yeah.
There are. We actually have some cool prizes. The grand prize is a Nikon Coolpix camera, because one of the things that we love to do is see photos of children at parks, and we want to know where they've been, where they're going with their families. So we really encourage children to get connected to our lovable woolly mascot, Buddy Bison, and he's the mascot of National Park Trust, and he encourages kids to explore outdoors because the parks are yours. So we encourage kids to take photos, to send them to us, and so they have an opportunity to win a really nice camera. We're going to have a drawing for a lucky winner for this Nikon camera, and we also have some other cool prizes that are on the website. You can click on the camera and see what other great things we have to offer from our wonderful sponsors.
Awesome. Oh, Grace, thank you so much. I know our family is registered, and we really can't wait to take part in this. So thanks very much. We will keep you posted on the on what's happening on the May 16th event here in Alaska.
Okay, terrific. Thank you so much, and have a wonderful Kids to Parks Day.
Thank you so much. For more information about Kids to Parks Day and all the events listed in today's Outdoor Explorer Family Calendar, visit alaskapublic.org. Keep exploring and enjoy an Alaska spring in the great outdoors. This is Erin Kirkland with akonthego.com.
You're listening to Outdoor Explorer on KSKA Anchorage. The program repeats tonight at 9 o'clock on FM 91.1. Connect with Outdoor Explorer anytime. Download podcasts and see what's coming up on future programs by going to our website at alaskapublic.org.
Back. It's Outdoor Explorer, and I'm Charles Wolforth, and our topic today is beach and creek cleanup. We're talking about the environment that we all use for our outdoor activities, and it's some of these beautiful places, some of these places where we get fish, so we get our food there. We want them to be clean, and yet as a society, we throw all kinds of plastic and junk out there, and somebody's got to clean it up. So it just so happens that there are some volunteers and some organizations that go out there and do that. In the first half, we heard from the Gulf of Alaska Keeper, Chris Pallister, and his crew cleaning up out where it's pretty difficult to get. But we also have a lot of garbage here in Anchorage that needs to be cleaned up, and our listeners can get involved. There's volunteer activities to go out there and take care of these waterways. And so that's our topic for this for this second half of the show. I have with me Sam Baker, who is with the Alaska Marine Conservation Council. She's our engagement and development manager. Thanks for being with us, Sam.
Thanks for having me.
And she's going to be talking about the beach cleanup, which is right here in town. And Sherry Northen, who is the executive director of the Anchorage Waterways Council. Thanks for being with us, Sherry.
Thank you.
So the Waterways Council has been around for a long time.
30 years.
Yeah, tell us about. I mean, why we have a Waterways Council? What's your mission?
The mission is to protect, enhance, and restore the waterways and the wetlands and associated uplands of the municipality of Anchorage, 2,000 square miles, And it was started by concerned citizens because it's not taken care of by any agencies or government. People think it is, but it's not. It had to come from volunteers.
Mm-hmm. And I've recently written a book about Anchorage history, and one of the big issues that drove Anchorage development was we used to just dump all of our sewage right into the creeks. The creeks were the sewage system for getting sewers out to the ocean, and that was a huge fight. And then Waterways Council came along and started getting the garbage out of the creek. So these things don't happen by themselves. People have to put a lot of effort into taking care of the creeks.
No, and the other thing that you're talking about, using the creeks just as sewage ways, they were also bulldozed, changed. They were, the meanders mm-hmm. were taken out. They were straightened for development, which really changes the whole character of a watershed.
Yeah. I feel like our creeks are one of the real defining qualities of Anchorage. You know, we have those wonderful bike trails that run along the creeks. Now you can do that wonderful, fabulous bike trail loop. Mm-hmm. You know, if you take a Saturday, you can do the Coastal Trail and then do the Chester Creek Trail and come back on the Campbell Creek Trail. Big loop. It's so beautiful. And you realize what a cool town we live in. And the creeks are such a big part of it.
Right, right. I live by the Campbell Creek Trail and love it. But they're also a place where it's a highway for people to drop their debris. And one of the biggest things we find are people go along with their dogs, which we like to see, but they don't pay attention. Mm-hmm. The dog's poop doesn't get picked up, washes off into the creeks. So there is debris in the creeks that you can't see, and it affects human health. And then there are the pieces of plastic, water bottles, fast food, all sorts of things that end up in the creeks. They say 80% of the debris that ends up in the oceans, in the great trash gyre that Chris was speaking of, start on land in our watersheds.
Right. Everything we do sort of runs to the ocean eventually. Right.
At our doorstep.
Uh-huh. Yep. Well, do you think that, I mean, if some Cretan throws a soda bottle out the window of his car, that sort of blows along until it goes to the lowest point, and that's the creek, and that's another way we get a lot of garbage in there?
Usually, and what people don't understand in Anchorage, the way it's set up, it goes into storm drains, the grates, and all of those are connected to the creeks by a series of pipes, and they do not go to the water treatment plant. People don't understand that your yard waste, the drips from your car, cigarette butts, litter all eventually find the lowest point, which is usually a storm drain, and then it could be 500 feet, it could be 100 feet, but it deposits directly, untreated, into our creeks, which then run out into Cook Inlet, which then run out to the Gulf of Alaska.
Right, and fish are coming up the creeks. We thankfully still have salmon in our creeks, which has got to be pretty unique around the country for a city our size to have salmon, but we don't want them swimming through nasty junk. I mean, that's gross.
No. It affects spawning activities. It can change temperature, the turbidity of the water. Fish and game has never been able to tie things like pet waste to affecting salmon, but the trash certainly does. It can even cause a blockage and make it so they can't migrate upstream to spawn.
Yeah. So we need to get folks out there to help clean it up, and the cleanup is coming up just in a couple of days here. The next week, the 9th through the
May
16th.
May 9th through May 16th, mm-hmm. right? We're doing it. We're allowing, we're going to allow teams to sign up for any of those days on our website. Anytime they can go out, if it's after work, during work, as many people, please sign up, and then we can provide them with the supplies they need in advance to mm-hmm. get out and clean wherever they want.
And sort of the guidance. And we'll get into more of that later, but all of the links and all the resources we're talking about on today's show, you can find at alaskapublic.org. Click on today's show, Beach and Creek Cleanup. You'll find links to the Anchorage Waterways Council, or Sherry's the executive director. But I want to turn to my other guest, Sam Baker from the Alaska Marine Conservation Council. You guys are cleaning up the... People don't think of Anchorage as being a city with beaches, right? Mm-hmm. You know, it's sort of out of sight, out of mind. But actually, more and more people are using our beaches and going down and sort of enjoying them and realizing that, yeah, they're accessible and fun places to hang out. And so you're trying to get those cleaned up.
Definitely. We want them to be clean for everyone to be able to use. And a lot of what happens down there is people leave things behind, whether they're enjoying the beach for the day or they have a bonfire at night. And that's where a lot of that garbage comes from.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. So how long have you been doing this?
Well, this particular coastal cleanup's been going on for about 4 years. The Alaska Marine Conservation Council, along with the Alaska Ocean Observing System, got involved last year. Mm-hmm. And it was actually a volunteer-started program, which I think is pretty unique and pretty cool. And that was by Regan Brooks, who she just wanted to clean up the coast with her family and invited other families. And so it's kind of grown out of that initial effort just by one person.
That's great. It's kind of similar to Chris Pallister with his thing. They started out as
definitely.
Volunteers and pretty soon it's taken over their whole lives.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
But it's kind of, it's manageable, right? It's not a huge amount of mileage and there's not a huge amount of garbage there.
Right. Yeah. It's certainly not like what you'll see in Homer, or Kodiak, the sorts of things they're getting on their beaches. Since Anchorage is a little more protected, the marine debris isn't coming up as much. It's usually cleaning up after people who were there. So we do the cleanup, and then the beach is pretty clean afterwards, which is pretty rewarding each summer.
Uh-huh. So do you see stuff that comes down the creek that ends up on the beach down there? Is that something that you think is happening?
Yeah, I would assume so. I mean, it's coming from the creek, and then Cook Inlet will bring it back up to some of the beaches. There's water bottles and different plastic styrofoam pieces and things like that that will wash up. And then there's also a lot of rusty nails. So, yeah.
Where are the nails coming from?
Those are coming from, we assume, pallets that are being burned down on the beaches if people have a bonfire, which is something you don't think of. You think you burn the pallets and everything's gone, but those nails will end up there and then they rust. And, you know, if you have little kids playing down on the beach, it's not ideal.
Yeah. I kind of feel like if you're going to go down and have a gathering on the beach, that's great, but don't be a jerk and just leave your garbage behind.
Yeah, definitely. Some of the places, even on Point Warren's off, there's more... Point Warren's off, further down on the beach, there will be designated fire rings. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure about the legality of those, but at least they're contained and people know not to walk in them.
Right,
so.
That area of the coastal refuge that's kind of south of Point Warren's off around Point Campbell. Mm-hmm. People have built all kinds of crazy stuff down there with driftwood, and I suppose nobody cares, you know. At least there's nobody ever seems to enforce anything down there.
Yeah.
Okay, so when is the beach cleanup taking place?
Yeah, our coastal cleanup this year is going to be Saturday, June 6th. So World Oceans Day is June 8th. So we're doing the coastal cleanup that weekend, kind of in coordination with World Oceans Day.
All right. And how do people get involved?
It's really easy. There's information on the Anchorage Coastal Cleanup website. So it's anchoragecoastalcleanup.org. There's also a Facebook page for Anchorage Coastal Cleanup. And so those will have the information about where to show up. Lanari Park and Point Warren's off are our two main spots, and people fan out from there. But you just show up June 6th at Lanari Park at 10 a.m. and you can help out. So it's pretty easy. There's no sign up involved or anything like that.
Right. And there's no... There's nothing difficult or technical about this. You're just walking along with a garbage bag, picking up garbage.
Yep. You get some gloves and a garbage bag. It's pretty easy. A lot of people bring their kids. It's a family event. People who are biking the coastal trail will stop by. So it's a really easy way to get involved.
Hopefully it's good weather.
Yes.
So we'll have all that linked to our website at alaskapublic.org. And again, the links to find out when the beach cleanup is. Since it's not coming up for another month or so, it'd be good to get that information bookmarked so you don't forget about it. Yeah. So, Sherry, from the Waterways Council point of view, talking about the creeks in Anchorage, what is the water quality in our creeks? Are they safe places for people to be recreating? I was on the, you know, people are already kayaking down Campbell Creek and doing stuff and... And obviously, these are urban waterways, and you mentioned sort of the fecal, from the dogs and stuff. But what's the sort of the health read on these creeks?
I would say it's improved considerably since the Waterways Council started in the 80s. Fecal coliform is in the gut of all warm-blooded mammals, humans and dogs, moose, bear, beavers. The there are about 65,000 to 70,000 dogs in Anchorage. If they poop 3/4 of a pound a day, we've got tons of dog waste in the city that can run off into the creeks.
That's even grosser than the stuff Chris was talking about.
Yeah, it is gross. But then you're talking about using the creeks for recreation, and kayaking is considered secondary recreation, according to DEC. And you're not likely to get water in your mouth unless you go overboard, flip, or something. Mm-hmm. That's secondary contact. What I see are little kids at some of the beaches, like on Campbell Creek, wading, little 2-year-olds, 18-month-olds, you know, and they're going to get water in their mouth. That's primary contact, as though a swimmer would get it. And you can pick up roundworms. You can get Giardia. Unfortunately, as I said, it's improved, but every creek in Anchorage except Rabbit Creek has fecal coliform impairment. So you could pick something
just
up.
Not safe. Yeah,
you don't see it
for
either.
For swimming, yeah.
Yeah, and that's the thing. You see trash, but you don't see this other thing that could really bother you.
What kind of illness would you get from that?
Like I said, Giardia, and some people don't know what that is.
That's diarrhea that lasts
diarrhea,
a long, long
the worst
time.
Thing yeah. that you'd ever had. There are certain types of worms you could get. It's an indicator that the bacteria is in the water. Now, whether you will get it, there's no guarantee, but it's in the water. And until it comes off the EPA's impaired water list, it's a possibility that you could pick up something that's nasty. And pets can pick it up, too. Your dog swimming in University Lake and other places.
And that gets into the Westchester Lagoon is just Chester Creek, so I assume that that's impaired and not safe as well.
Yes, yes.
Other lakes around town? I mean, Little Campbell Lake, I've swum there. Is that okay?
Little Campbell Lake is probably, it doesn't have a lot of residential era or housing around it. So it's used as a control lake for testing, particularly for pesticides. But houses surround Otis Lake, Hideaway Lake, University Lake has a dog park. Connors Bog has a dog park. Cheney Lake has housing around it. So anytime you have people, yards, pets, and things like that, you have a problem.
So don't swim in those places.
Yeah, I'd be really careful.
Yeah. Where's Little Campbell Lake? If people don't know, it's in Kincaid Park, and you can pretty spot.
It's very pretty.
Very unusual to have a place like that in the city.
Very kind of pristine in a way, although it has another problem, which are invasive aquatic plants.
Yeah. Well, so we could probably talk the whole show
about
this.
On that, yeah.
But what about the safety of your creek cleanup people? If they're getting in the creek to get junk out of it, aren't they going to be in contact with dirty water?
Yes, but usually people are wearing boots or hip waders, and we provide them with gloves and first aid kits. We give them really careful instructions. You can find needles. Some people dump syringes off the bridges into the creeks, and that's kind of scary because if you're down trying to pick something up, you don't want to poke yourself with a needle. There are cars in creeks. We found a shotgun in the creek a couple times, bowling balls, computers, washers, dryers.
You know, like when you find this stuff, you think, like, why is that there? I mean, the shotgun, I would...
It's fun. It's fun to throw things into creeks and off cliffs. It is. Or if you steal a bike, that's a great place to put it.
Right. Just getting rid of something so you don't get caught. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, let me mention one thing that we're starting to work on right now that kind of ties into Chris, and that is the amount of monofilament and fishing line that's being left by fishermen. All our creeks that can be fished, people will pull their lines off if they have a tangle in the reel, leave it on the ground, and it entangles wildlife, birds, and dogs. So that's another thing we're now working on, or goes down into the inlet, and then it becomes Chris's problem.
Right, part of the ocean, right.
Yeah.
So in terms of your cleanup, do people sort of like compare what's the weirdest thing we found?
We've done that, yeah. The farthest travel, the strangest piece pulled. But this year, because of funding being so limited, we're not going to have a celebration right after creek cleanup. It's going to be in the fall. Uh-huh. So the contest that we would usually have that inspire a lot of people to get out there and find things, maybe they can save it or turn it in. Shotguns, we ask you to turn into the police.
Sure. So what's the weirdest thing that has ever, that you know, do you have a favorite, like, totally weird thing? Bowling ball is pretty weird.
Bowling ball. We found some pretty weird underwear, pornographic DVDs. I guess didn't want to take them home. Yeah, the shotguns were always they were a favorite.
Strange. Yeah. Weird. All right. So it's Outdoor Explorer, and we're talking about creek and beach cleanup on today's show with Sherry Northen, who's the executive director of the Anchorage Waterways Council, and Sam Baker from the Alaska Marine Conservation Council. What is the Alaska Marine Conservation Council anyway?
Yeah, we're a statewide organization based in Anchorage, but we have staff throughout the state. And we work to protect the integrity of marine resources and coastal communities in Alaska. So we're not just working on necessarily the science or policy side of things. We also work with communities on different social aspects. A lot of that relates to fishing, but some of it's like the cleanup is just related to oceans.
So where did the group come from? What's the sort of the genesis of it?
Yeah, well, we were started 20 years ago. We just celebrated our 20th anniversary last year. And we came about from a woman who was working in coastal communities in Alaska to understand what their needs were. Her name was Nivette Bowen. She's a really cool lady. She still comes back and fishes in Yakutat. But she was talking with them, and in these coastal communities, one of the biggest issues that came up was bycatch, which has been in the news quite a bit lately, but is the incidental catch of species that aren't the directed fishery. Mm-hmm. So this group was born out of that to tackle this big issue in fisheries, and has evolved since then. We still work on bycatch, but it's become many more projects and programs since then.
So your kind of your starting place is from a fisheries perspective.
Yes.
Fishermen generally want a clean environment because that's where they get their fish.
Yep.
Yeah. So where do you get your funding?
From a number of different groups, foundations. We also have about 740 members in the state who are just individual donors, many of them fishermen, some of them coastal residents or seafood consumers. So, yeah, a number of different sources. For the coastal cleanup, particularly, actually, Alaskan Brewing has funded us through their Coastal Code program, which is pretty neat. So they're really invested in keeping our coast clean here in Alaska.
So are these volunteer cleanups taking place in other communities?
They are. Through the AMCC and the AOS program, we're just doing Anchorage at the moment. Mm-hmm. Two of our other big communities that we work in are Homer and Kodiak. And in Homer, the Center for Coastal Studies does a lot of cleanup efforts there. And they also do some really neat marine debris art creation that they've actually come up to Anchorage and helped us do at our coastal cleanup. So that's fun. And then in Kodiak, the Island Trails Network has been doing a lot of cleaning up as well. So we found a need to do Anchorage and wanted to fill that void.
Yeah, yeah. Get Anchorage people to think of themselves as a coastal community, which I think
definitely.
Maybe most of us really don't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we definitely are. And I think the cleanups have really helped people think about it that way in terms of their trash. And then we have other efforts, be it through seafood sales, that make people think of it in terms of, you know, our fishing resources.
So how many people do you normally get on this project, this beach cleanup?
Yeah, last year we had over 75 people,
wow.
Which is pretty good, especially when you're looking at beaches that aren't too big and, you know, we're not traveling to many different places. So, yeah, it's been really impressive. And I think it's just a really fun, easy event for people to volunteer, and doesn't seem like a lot of commitment, so people like coming down.
Yeah, yeah, our beaches are kind of fun. So have you, I don't know if you've found anything bizarre like they found in the creeks.
We have, yeah.
Oh, wow. I've got to hear what your bizarre things are.
My bizarre list includes a toaster oven, which how that made its way to the beach, I'm not sure. And a laptop as well that came up.
Wow.
and other, I mean, there'll be mattresses and bikes, like Sherry was saying, and there was a gaming console last year, ski poles, so it can really vary.
And things that you think that people have, that came from Anchorage, that somebody like threw it off the bluff or something rather than something that washed up?
I think, I don't know, but I think it's more likely that they're coming about that way. Often there'll be further back on the beach, closer to land. So those things, I think, are happening from just dumping things. But occasionally there'll be odd things that wash up, usually the lighter objects.
What kind of weird stuff is going on there at night, right? I know I see bonfires going on at the beach sometimes. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I run late at night, and I don't know what the rules are about that. I guess they're not hurting anything, but they're leaving their mess.
Yeah. I'm not sure that any of those are technically allowed, but
I don't think they are. Yeah.
Yeah. I guess we would just ask people that they clean up.
Live and let live.
The very least.
Sherry, what's the prospect for solving this problem? I mean, you said we have made a lot of progress in the health of our waterways, and it's better now than it was. What's your goal? Do you see any prospect that we get to the point where they really are clean enough to swim in?
I think it would take quite a bit of work for that to happen. It takes 2 years of constant testing to get an impaired waterway off of the impaired waters list. It has to meet certain standards, or water quality standards. So that's one of the issues. As we've gotten Jewel Lake delisted from impaired waters, but the creeks are different because of the running water and carrying things off down the watershed. So they're a little more difficult to get off the impaired waters list. We're finding less trash. I think that's a good sign.
That's great. So yeah. Over the years, it's getting easier to clean up the creeks.
Right. And we also do a volunteer water quality monitoring program that is in jeopardy because of funding as well. But we test for fecal coliform, turbidity, pH, and various factors. That's not enough to get it off the impaired waters list, but it gives us a kind of an idea of where the creeks are, and they are improving.
That's great.
They talk about 80 years or in the 80s, you could walk across the trash in a creek.
Yeah.
So it is
improving. I think people are getting more conscious, and a lot more people pick up their dog poop as well. It seems like if somebody's not, now there's like a negative social sort of reaction to that person, whereas in the past, people didn't really care about it.
Yeah, but they also think, some of them think that the municipality has people that go around and pick up after them, which they don't.
Yeah. So that's, in terms of what people can do to help, they can come out and volunteer, but they could also, adjust their behavior to make sure that your trash is covered, that you don't like let stuff blow away, that you make sure you pick up after your dog, and just these basic things so that we all share a cleaner community that we can
enjoy. And that
enjoy.
Comes down to education.
So with just a minute left, let's go over how people can get involved again. Sherry, Creek Cleanup?
Creek Cleanup from May 19th through the 16th, our website, which will be posted on your website. Mm-hmm. You can go there and sign up. You can find maps of locations and places to clean, and we'll contact you as soon as we hear.
And open to individuals and groups.
Individuals.
You can just come the day, too, if you can't plan
May 16th to Potter Marsh, Westchester Lagoon, or University Lake.
All right.
In the morning.
And I didn't mention, of course, Goose Lake and Lake Spinard. If the Muni has got it posted for swimming, it's safe to swim there. We didn't really say that.
I will leave that to the Muni.
All right. Sounds like another topic. Sam, quickly, how could people can volunteer for your
They can come on down to Lanary Park on Saturday, June 6th at 10 a.m. We'll be there till noon. So if you want to bike down, walk down, there's a parking spot there. And just look online at anchoragecoastalcleanup.org or on Facebook, there'll be the event.
Thanks to both my guests, Sam Baker, Alaska Marine Conservation Council, Sherry Northen, Alaska Anchorage Waterways Council. Chris Pallister was with us earlier from Gulf of Alaska Keeper. Join me next week for a show about rock hounding and fossils with folks who get serious about geology and finding specimens to keep. Thanks for joining us today on Outdoor Explorer. We had help today from Grace Bogine. Our producer is Evan Erickson. I'm your host, Charles Wolforth. I'll see you outside.
Outdoor Explorer is a production of KSKA Public Radio in Anchorage, Alaska. Theme music is by Portugal, The Man. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect the station or its underwriters. You can find Outdoor Explorer on Facebook and on iTunes. To see what's coming up on Outdoor Explorer and add your voice to the conversation, go to our website at alaskapublic.org.
Life informed. This is Alaska Public Media.